Welcome to the I Hate Critics Movie Review Podcast. I am professional film critic Sean Patrick. With me is artist Jeff Lassiter. Jeff, how are you?
Hello, I'm wonderful. Just couldn't be better. How about you?
Doing good. Just watched the Joker trailer. We just watched it at the same time, actually. And why don't you give us your impression?
I'm here for Lady Gaga. I wasn't a huge fan of the first Joker because it just seemed too incel-y for me, but I'm interested to see what they're, how they're gonna, if this is all just in their heads, you know, or if they're gonna both get out of Arkham and go on a musical tour together.
She is magnetic. The first time you see her, like, you can sense, like, I don't like the term Riz, but like, she's got it. Like, she's just got that thing. Like, when you see Lady Gaga, your eyes lock on her. Like,
yeah.
That's just that quality that she has that, you know, not everyone has. And there's just no doubt about that. She's a big improvement to this whole thing because I did not care for the first Joker. I tried to be indifferent to it, but the more people talked about how much they loved it, I became Bob talking about Star Wars. Like, it's just
I don't like it anymore because everybody else does.
I just think some of the wrong people liked it too much.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. I'm right there with you. Yeah.
It was stylish, but even though I like this trailer, I just don't see Adam McKay as an auteur. I see him as more of a Carpenter style director, not John Carpenter style, but like a Carpenter, like a guy who just puts together movies well, but doesn't have that extra soulful quality that the truly great artists have.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that term? The, like, you know, journeyman or, you know what I mean? Where they're just, they're decent. They can get the job done, but they're never going to be great. You know, like Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. I disagree with that, but I think he is a legendary visionary director. I think there's a difference between an artist and what I like to call a carpenter or a craftsman. And there are plenty of really great craftsmen. We're going to talk about a pretty good craftsman later on in the show that put together, assembled pieces into a solid film, but it's not a work of art. It's not something that was made with passion. And I think McKay works with passion, but I think it's all in the purpose of assembling a product that's going to be sold.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think Lady Gaga does improve this for sure. She makes Joaquin Phoenix slightly more appealing. He's not supposed to be appealing, I guess. I understand that. But he takes unappealing to another degree sometimes. Like, there's anti-heroes, and then there's, like, somebody you just don't enjoy being around. And I think Joaquin Phoenix presses that line so hard sometimes.
You're not wrong.
You're the star of a movie, dude. You still have to be kind of appealing.
Just a little bit. Just somewhat, you know, like Mia Goth.
Transition to the Maxine trailer.
Yeah, you haven't watched that, but I can't wait.
I haven't watched it yet because I already know how amazing Maxine's going to be because, I mean, Ty West is an artist. This is a man this is two movies in a row where he's made fucking masterpieces. I've not loved every Ty West movie, but the man, it has a vision and he's accomplished it two times in a row where he has just delivered fucking masterpieces.
I mean, even X was very good. It didn't rise to the level of, like, Pearl.
Mm-hmm. Pearl's a better movie, but I think X is excellent.
Oh, that's exactly what I'm saying, is Pearl was just a step up. And I think that's in part due to his direction and the fact that he wrote it with Mia Goth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he is an auteur. He is somebody absolutely. Who, you know, he has a vision, and he as he was making X and they were in quarantine and they wrote Pearl, that's fascinating to me how they all of a sudden it was just, hey, you know what? This is a really interesting character. What if we did this? And now it's led to Maxine. And then he's also talking about how he sees a way to like keep going.
Yeah.
So, you know, originally a trilogy, but possibly more depending on how this does. So, but the cast, the not giving anything away, you'll watch the trailer, but they keep referencing the Night Stalker. And I mean, it does take place in LA during the Night Stalker. However, I think that's a red herring.
Yeah.
Because when you watch this, you're going to see that there's somebody watching her who is very, very much. And we just talked about Argento and the Giallo, you know, the Giallo movies where the hooded or the black figure with the fedora and the black gloves. And that character is in here. And it's like,
oh, shit.
Oh, I see what he's doing. So,
wow.
I don't think it's Richard Ramirez. Necessary. I guess a lot of people are up in arms. Night Stalker from the 80s. But trailer. I should have made you watch that before too. But
I was so enamored by the cast announcement. I mean, they seem to be setting her up perfectly to finally break through. This could be the Academy Award level thing that finally puts the attention on Mia Goth that she deserves. Cause I mean, surrounding her with Lily Collins and Kevin Bacon. And I mean, fuck, that's incredible. There's a couple more big names in this that are just, wow. Taking this to another level.
Elizabeth Debicki is in it.
Yes. That's what I was trying to think of. Love her. She's incredible. She's been great in everything she's in. Like that's, amazing. What a choice. What an absolute a coup to get her in that movie. I cannot wait.
When's it coming out? It didn't say exactly. I think it's this summer. But like, I mean, Giancarlo Esposito, Michelle Monaghan, Lily Collins, Elizabeth Debicki, Bobby Cannavale, my ex-husband, you know, just so many good people in this movie. And I look, after Pearl, will literally, if Ty West and Mia Goth sat down and read mean tweets for an hour and a half, I'd watch it.
Yeah. I'll watch anything Mia Goth does. I mean, this plus Infinity Pool, she is the most electric, exciting, engaging actress working at the moment.
Even so, like Infinity Pool, when I went back and watched it, I didn't love it as much as I did the first time, but I still liked it. And that was mostly because Alexander Skarsgård. there's something about him that, like, I'm not like on board with him all the time. But even in a movie I didn't love, she just leaps off the screen.
She really does. The movie grows in my mind when I think about it because for any issues that it does have, it is so bold and so unique different. It is finally like Brandon Cronenberg really stepping out of his dad's shadow.
Yeah. Oh, completely. Yeah.
I'm excited to see what he does next because he feels like each time, like with Possession or Possessor and Infinity Pool, he is stepping up to something even greater that could be like something that his dad did, something that you've just not seen before.
Yeah. This is my most anticipated movie of the year.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I'm not sure if there's an Ari Aster movie. I've heard things about Ari Aster having done something already.
Yeah.
So that would maybe compete with it, but that's the only thing that could compete with it is if there's an Ari Aster movie.
I mean, if I think I said this when you weren't on the show that week. It was just me and Bob. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about movie, or you had left early or something. And we were talking about movies that we were looking forward to. And I said, even then, before seeing this trailer, that this was my most anticipated movie. And Bob agreed. And now I'm like, well, I want it to be out already. Can it come out my birthday weekend this month? Because that would be great.
Yeah. I think Bob's going to have to come back for that one. For sure.
Yeah, you better.
For sure. All right, let's get into the new movies this week. I don't know if you saw this one, but I did see Monkey Man, directed by Dev Patel and co-written by Dev Patel and starring Dev Patel. This is a I know people want to call it
Dev Patel.
People want to call it like a Indian John Wick, and I think that's incredibly reductive. There's an homage there. There's certainly an influence there, but it's not. That's just too simplistic. This is a movie that is just bathed in cool. It looks fantastic. The action is spectacular. The sound design, the bone crunching, the blood dripping, it just gets every aspect of that right. And you can sense that as a director, Dev Patel wanted to make sure that all of those aspects work together to create the aesthetic that he wants. He's telling the story here about a guy who doesn't really have a name. He's referred to variously as Kid, or he takes on the name Bobby or Billy at one point, just as a kind of a cover. But he lost his mother as a child to the corruption of the current Indian government that is now rising up. And he's going to take them down one by one and just burn the entire leadership to the ground. And to do so, he's got to come up with a kind of a clever plan to infiltrate. He's got to fail. He's got to fall back down and then rise back up. This movie's got a great training montage in it, which is awesome. I love it. I love a good training montage. This one's got a great one, all leading up to just this. The roiling rampage of revenge at the end that is just superb stuff. I love this kind of action movie. I like the big blood and guts kind of action movie. I like a good, you know, punch to the gut. You know, where you can hear the ribs breaking. It's just that stuff is fun and exciting and strange. And this movie's got it. This movie has every element in place to work. And you know, for a first time director, especially a guy who is directing himself. It's a pretty impressive piece of work. It's not flawless or anything, but for what it is, as a hardcore action movie, this is great. And it really demonstrates a director who cares about what he is doing and cares about every element of filmmaking.
Hmm. Yeah, I did not get to it, but it sounds really good.
It's high end for the top movies of the year. It's not like it's not going to be in my top 10 by the end of the year, but maybe not even my top 20, but it's for what's been out there, you know, recently, it's quite good. It's no Late Night with the Devil, but I'm saying it's quite good.
I saw somebody yesterday on Twitter who was going off about how, horror movie people need to pump the brakes and stop releasing a new horror movie every week because it's watering down Mance, the genre. Yeah. Yeah.
Scott Mance, the movie critic. I don't know him. I've not interacted with him. I'm aware of him because he was getting dragged. He became Film Twitter's main character for just saying maybe a few less horror movies.
Yeah, fuck that. The thing is like every time a horror movie does really well,
mm-hmm.
like immaculate, you know, and there's people like him that are like, is horror back? Horror never left.
Well, it did in the 90s. Horror in the 90s is pretty bad.
But you know what I'm saying? Like horror consistently saves box office, you know? It's like, that's what people go to see because they love it. And yeah, it's horror back.
Horror needs to slow down. There's too much of it.
Oh my God.
There is a lot of it's a glut.
But here's the thing, though. There is horror for everybody. You know, like an Ari Aster, movie, it's horror for, you know, people like you.
I don't know what that means.
No, you know, like people who like don't just like horror. You know, they like drama and they like human interaction and that kind of stuff. Then there's horror like Night Swim for people who literally just need to go out of the house once in a while and see something, no matter how bad it is. You know, and I with horror, there's something for everybody. Like, I'm not a huge comedy fan.
Yeah.
Overall, like, that's probably
you don't like laughing.
I laugh at myself every fucking day. If I'm going to watch a movie, comedy is not my first choice. Most of the time. Horror is always my first choice. But, you know, I think that with the onslaught of horror movies that are out there and how many there are coming out all the time, I'm not starving for it. And I'm, that is perfectly acceptable to me.
Well, we're talking about horror because we're going to be talking for the next 30 minutes or so, at least 40 minutes or so, at least, about the Omen franchise. Beginning with the prequel, the brand new Omen movie, because we can start at the beginning. This is the movie that precedes the original. So we're talking about The First Omen, starring Nell Tiger-Free. And this is takes us back to Italy in the early 1970s. And a nun arrives in Italy at the behest of her mentor, played by Bill Nighy. She's coming there to work in a convent / orphanage where she'll be taking care of children. She immediately takes to a young girl there who is in trouble a lot. The nuns kind of put her in the bad room because she's constantly acting up. Nell Tiger-Free's character sort of takes to her and wants to be her kind of mentor, and they're developing a relationship. And just as she's kind of reaching out to this young girl, she's approached by a priest played by Ralph Ineson. And it's very easy to recognize this guy because he looks a lot like Patrick Troughton. And Patrick Troughton, who, of course, played the priest in the original, The Omen, and it's the same character, which impressive piece of casting, but really it just comes down to bangs. Everybody loves a good flush over the forehead haircut. We'll get to that. But he warns her that the child that she is trying to reach is the target potentially of this cabal of the church that wants to create a reason for people to return to the church. They want to scare people into coming back to Christianity, and so they're using these children to do that. I'm being a little vague, but I will probably spoil it anyway, so stay tuned. and so it goes. There'll be twists and turns. And in my review, Jeff, I called this movie a widget. And what I mean when I say that is that this is a product that was created on a budget and a deadline. They said, here's your budget, here's your deadline. Create this product that we own and deliver it by this time under this budget. It's not something that was made by people who were like eager to maybe they were, but like people who are, this is an assignment they were given. This is not something that I think anybody set out to make. They're like, we need a director, we need stars, we need a crew, and assign those people these places and make us this product that we want. And I think that affects that affects my feelings about this movie a lot, is that I can appreciate that it's well crafted. It's a well made widget, but it's a widget.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I read your review the other day, and when we talk about the original Omen, I know that you are not a huge fan of it.
We'll get there.
I am, and that kind of brung up one of the problems that I had with this movie. is it retcons a pretty major plot point?
Ooh, tell me, because I didn't recognize that.
Okay, so in the original Omen, Damien, the Antichrist, is born of a jackal. He was born from a jackal.
Isn't that what happens in this movie?
No. He's born from Nell Tiger Free.
Right, but the jackal had to impregnate her.
No, 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 no. The in the original, the jackal gives birth.
Oh, I see. I don't remember that.
Yeah,
I just saw the movie and I have no memory.
Well, remember they go to Megiddo and they unearth the grave,
right?
And there's a jackal there. The skeleton of the jackal is there.
I thought that was the skeleton of a baby.
Well, there's two skeletons. There's the jackal who gave birth to Damien, and then there's the baby that Thorne had. His wife had, Catherine had given birth to, and they killed the baby. They crushed the skull so that they could give him Damien.
Hmm.
So trust me, I've seen this enough times that it's like, and I've read the book, and you know, like it's,
is that in the book?
Yeah. Well, the book is based on the screenplay, which is, it's not a book. It's a novelization.
But the novelization says that the jackal gave birth.
Yes, and they actually bring that up in Damien Omen 2. Mark, his cousin, says, "You were born of a jackal." And he says, yes, I was. So they retconned that pretty like blatantly in this new
destroy
one.
Destroy that, yeah, because that's no longer canon, apparently.
And I'm just like, wait, what, huh? And I kept thinking, oh, well, maybe they put it in a jackal or something. I don't know. So that it'll, but then no, it just, it doesn't happen. So
maybe because that's a very stupid idea.
Let's preface this with saying religion and religious horror is all make-believe. So,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so the fact that, you know, the Antichrist would be born of a jackal is not far-fetched.
If you're somebody who's never seen the original Omen and you see this movie, you're going to be fine. You're not going to be affected by that lore. That is my point. That you'll watch this movie. It does make sense. And I don't think this is a poorly made movie. I think it's a well-made horror movie. I think it's affected by the fact that you do know what's going to happen. Even if you're walking into this knowing that this is the first Omen, you probably are aware that this is a prequel. You also, again, it kind of removes some of the excitement for me knowing exactly where this is headed. And the movie doesn't do well to hide that sort of predictable aspect. But the one good thing that I can say about this movie overall is that Nell Tiger Free is a great actress. She sells the hell out of every moment of this movie. Her heart is fully in this, and I appreciate that. I don't necessarily know if it's in service of something that's worthy of the amount that she's giving, but she's got two really terrific, like, standout moments in this, and one of which is immediately following a car wreck in front of a church that she just... I mean, she throws herself so hard into that scene, and I was just kind of pushed back in my seat watching just how powerful she was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she's great in it. The when she's being told that she should go out because how is she going to know what she's giving up if she doesn't experience it?
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of leans into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked her performance there.
I didn't love that scene. I thought this is very obvious what is happening at this point. It kind of, I thought that scene kind of tipped its hand a little too much for me.
No. I like the way she played it.
Yeah. You're not going to be surprised by this movie.
No.
It's just, there's not going to be a surprise anything here. And I know the movie wants to be surprising. There are aspects of it that really want this to be a surprise sort of twist, and it's not.
No. I also feel like if Immaculate hadn't come out 2 weeks ago, this movie would be better.
Maybe.
I mean, we just watched Immaculate, which was a great movie.
That is a terrific movie that is right up there with Late Night with the Devil. Like, that is it's that level good.
But the first 15 minutes of both of these movies, Immaculate and The First Omen, are like almost identical.
They really are.
And you got to wonder, because Immaculate's been out there for 10 or 12 years. Were they like, oh, this is really a good jumping off point for a new Omen movie. And they just stole the first 15 minutes.
I mean, the similarities are disturbing when you break it down. I mean, basically, I mean, the one convent that Sydney Sweeney is at is like it's a hospice, and the one that Nell Tiger Free is at is an orphanage. I mean, that's not a big leap screenwriting wise. That is not a big leap.
Yeah, I sat through the first 15 minutes of The First Omen thinking, didn't I just see this? But
yeah,
I mean, that's near there.
Didn't I just see this done far, far better?
Yeah, I didn't. Okay, I did not hate this movie. I did not.
No, me
either. But I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they could have paired about a half an hour off of it. It could have been a good, really solid hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're leaning into the prestige of the original Omen, such as it is, that was 2 hours, by saying we have to explain every little thing to lead up to the original Omen. And I don't think they needed to.
Definitely didn't. None of these movies need to be as long as they are.
You know, again, I think if you're going to see the first Omen, chances are you have a glancing familiarity with either the original one or the remake from 2006. I don't think that most of these, you know, most of the movies don't need to be as long as they are, except for maybe the first one. And that is because it has a lot to set up.
Yeah. Was there an animal birth in the Leif Schreiber, Julia Stiles one?
Yep, there was. Did you watch the remake this week?
No, I just read my old review, which I said how much I didn't like it. So.
I had never really, I've seen part of it, but I never watched the whole thing. Mm. And it is very, very closely tied to the original. I mean, it's largely unnecessary, like most remakes, but it was, for what it was well done.
Yeah.
You know, Liev Schreiber plays a really good Robert Thorne. Julia Stiles is serviceable. She's no Lee Remick as far as like her performance. Mm-hmm. But she's serviceable. I really did like Mia Farrow as Mrs. Baylock, the nanny. I thought she did a really good job in that. But again, it could have been Gus Van Sant's Psycho for, you know, as closely as it hewed to the, to the original.
Just how needless it is. It's just there's just no need to make it. It doesn't need to exist. It's a widget. It's something that we've got this product. We've assigned people to create it to the best of their abilities, and you know, maybe not the best of their abilities, but they did create it. It did get created on time and on budget.
Well, it was one of those things where they were remaking every horror movie from the 70s and 80s, and we still are. this was just. Yeah, but this was just on, you know, like they just had a list. Well, we haven't done this one yet. Let's do The Omen.
Who's got the rights? It's all about IP. It's all about IP these days. And this is an IP that we can take advantage of. And they haven't made a prequel yet. Here we go. Let's go. Make a prequel. Right.
Well, are we going to get the prequel to the prequel?
We're going to need a sequel to the prequel. I think Maybe
that's right. Yeah,
there was a tease of that at the very least, although I don't understand what the purpose of that would be.
Did you watch Omen 4?
Omen 4, the one with the little girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched about 15 minutes of it.
Okay. Well, let's
this
let's
is gonna
talk
be a
about...
running theme, Jeff. Just bear in mind.
So, well, let's talk about the original Omen then. We'll get up to that because I have a feeling I know where this sequel to the prequel could be.
So in 1975, somebody kidnapped Gregory Peck's family and forced him to make a movie, a horror film, far past his prime. Gregory Peck was looking to keep his SAG insurance because he hadn't worked in a couple of years and agreed to make this movie to maintain his SAG insurance.
I'm just shaking my head at you. I wish this was a visual podcast because I'm just like, this is my disappointed look.
Through gritted teeth and reciting the words of his kidnappers, Gregory Peck completes his performance in The Omen as Mr. Thorne, whose child dies in childbirth. At least that's what he's told. He's offered another child to try and save his wife's psyche, and he takes it because he's, you know, a rich and powerful asshole, so he's happy to take somebody else's child as his own and pretend that they're his kid. Turns out this is the child of Satan, Damien. We know this because Damien's got bangs. That's what the devil likes, is bangs. He's a big fan of bangs. Everybody's got bangs.
If he had a mullet, would it be okay?
Bangs are from the devil. I don't know if you know that.
Well, Courtney Cox and Scream 3 for
sure. I'm not sure you're aware of this, but bangs are from the devil.
I've seen Scream 3, and I've seen Courtney Cox's bangs in Scream 3. That you're not far off.
So Damien's just this evil little shit who, you know, doesn't even know if is he evil? Who's in charge? Who's doing all the shit that's going on? Is it Baylock? Is it the devil? Is the kid doing it? I don't know who's actually enacting the horror. The devil in the Omen franchise can do anything at any time. And I hate movies that don't have rules. Like, there are no rules. He can hear every conversation. He knows who to kill and when to kill and why to kill them. And I mean, what hope is there when the devil can follow them to Israel and know that they've got the knives to kill Damien, and then can just kill the guy who's going to do it just that at that point? Because it's just this overpowered villain. It's the devil is an overpowered villain, and there's no other side to push back.
Are you a fan of the Final Destination franchise?
I didn't mind the Final Destination franchise. I don't love it, but I mean, that movie did have some rules to it. Yeah.
Well, so one of the things about The Omen that I see that maybe you don't, or you just didn't like it enough to see it, was that it's basically saying that the Bible is real. And then all of the prophecies in the Bible, especially the book of Revelation and all that, you know, about the rise of the Antichrist, is just predestined by God to cause, you know, trials and tribulation on earth. And that this is all inevitable. Damien is going to be the Antichrist, and he's going to come to power, and he's going to control everything for a certain amount of time. It's just, it's because it was written, it's to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, you know, these weird freak accident deaths come from. I think it was also played in that you've got God and the devil on your mind. So these possible freak accidents could just be that, but you ascribe things to the devil and God, you know, like God works in mysterious ways. No, he doesn't. You just got cancer. You know, it's like that kind of thing, where people want to believe this, so they ascribe good things to God and bad things to the devil. So if you're kind of going with that as a premise, I think that the movie works much better. If you're going into it and you're like, you know, why is he all so powerful? Well, because it's God and the devil, and they, you know, that's what they do. And I think that's...
Are God and the devil working together then?
Well, you can't have... It's like you can't have one without the other. You know, it's like it's good and evil always has to coexist. You know, the Jedi and the Sith have to coexist. It's kind of that, you know... Again, like I said at the beginning of the show, religion, it's all made up for control and all that. And that's where you have to like lay aside your logic and just kind of see this for what it is. And that's what it is.
but if it's inevitable, then what's the point of the movie?
I'm not saying there is a point. I'm just saying that's
okay.
No, I'm just saying that's just what, you know, like you're there for the ride, not for the logic of it and what the point, you know, necessarily the point. And
I didn't enjoy the ride either. I didn't enjoy the ride either. So I guess I'm out of luck here because I'm kind of wanting to see a good versus evil story, and there is neither good nor evil in this movie, apparently. There are no two sides, but like the whole, like David Warner is like the most interesting character in the movie. He seems like the most committed and the most interested. And, you know, he's taking these pictures and it's showing him, you know, what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen to these people. That's what's going to happen to him. This is inevitable. This is going to happen. So what's the point of him even like leaving his house if he can't win? If he's got no hope of winning, why do we care?
Well, I think you go throughout the entire movie thinking that the good guys, quote unquote, are going to win.
Really?
You know? Well, you're going.
I didn't think that for a second.
Well, Gregory Peck
for a moment
is going,
they had a chance.
You're led to believe that Gregory Peck is going to kill Damien and all will be right with the world.
Yeah, I didn't feel that. I thought for sure that, especially after David Warner's death, I'm like, there is just no hope in this movie. There's no hope. And maybe that's just being like, what? Again, I'm not very compelled by Gregory Peck's gritted teeth, I don't want to be here performance either.
I also think, though, that the logic of it is that there's not really logic to it because it's religion. And you have to see Gregory Peck as become like his journey is from basically an atheist. He doesn't give a shit about God or the devil or whatever until the end when he really, really believes it. But is this all just group psychosis again, you know, where he's just led to believe this by all the people who are seeing coincidence and ascribing it to the devil. And he finally reaches that point. So.
See, I think I knew too much about The Omen before I saw it the first time. Like by the time it gets to me, you know, in the 90s, I already know that. So I'm assigning everything like the devil is is in this movie and the devil's going to do what the devil does. So I don't have the ability to look at this from any other angle than that, I guess. Yeah, so I can't see it any other way, and I don't see it any other way because I don't find any other aspect of the movie compelling.
Okay, I mean, I enjoy this for what it is. I saw it as a young kid, so back when I still believed in God and shit like that, you know, so I guess it affected me.
Does this lead you away from God, or?
Oh God, no! the way that church treated my family when my mom was sick helped with that. It's basically telling me I'm going to hell for how I was born.
I love the idea of like a battle between good and evil. I'm like, I want the fight. I want the fight between good and evil. I want there to be, and even if it's going to be a story where God is good and the devil is bad, I'm like, I'm here for it. Give me good versus evil. And to find out, I'm watching this nihilistic shit where like there is no good. It's all evil, and this is inevitable. It's just kind of, it's like watching Team America World Police again. I'm just like, everybody sucks. All right, well, that's not very much fun, guys.
Yeah.
Root for the guy who's going to kill the child, or root for the devil. What the fuck? I don't want to take sides in that.
When I first saw this, and when I first saw the first two, because I didn't see the third one until much later, mm-hmm. I really, you know, I still believed in like the battle of God and the devil and all that stuff. And I guess I, you know, looking back at that time, it was like, it was kind of scary. And what if this were really happening and all that kind of stuff? I mean, now I've grown up and I realize that that's not how the world works. But the story of good versus evil, whether it's real or not, it scared me at the end of it when I was a kid because evil won, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Two had some good. The first one was scary because it was like, oh, the evil won. The second one is, well, is he going to, are they going to finally get him? Or is it just another bunch of set pieces of really cool deaths? And the answer to that is both no.
it's a definite no. So Omen 2 comes out 2 years after The Omen, 1978, with, again, a very drunk William Holden, who probably doesn't know what movie he's in. playing the new head of the Thorne family. He's going to raise Damien now that his brother is dead, and for reasons, his mom is like, he's evil. Your brother tried to kill him for a reason, and she's got no reason to think that. Like, she's got absolutely no motivation to know why Gregory Peck tried to kill Damien, but she hates him. I'm already just checking boxes about, you know, what groceries I need to buy. I still have to do my taxes. The deadline is coming up. I got to fold some laundry. Like, this movie sucks balls. I hated it so much. The two kid leads in this movie are just awful. They're just unwatchable. Damien with that stupid fucking haircut. His cousin is just this empty vessel of a human being. There are no good characters to root for or be interested in this movie. And I was like 40 minutes in. I'm like, I can't do it anymore. I turned it off.
Oh,
so what did I miss?
Well, you miss that. He kills a bunch of people, including his cousin.
Oh.
Did you get to the part where he learned who he was?
No, I don't. I was about like, when does that? I was about 40 minutes in and I was hardly paying attention.
It's really close to that. Lance Henriksen tells him who he is and tells him to read the Bible, the book of Revelation, you know, and it's about you. So he goes and he reads it and then he has a freak out and he's like, realizes that, okay, that's got to be the truth because all this stuff happens and
is he able to like control his powers and shit?
Well, yeah, he gets to the point where he can, and Mark, his cousin, you know, is basically says, I know who you are. I know, you know, what's going on. I know what you can do. And he's like, well, Mark, I'm going to give you one chance, one more chance to come with me and be by my side. And that's all you're going to get. You're going to get one more chance. And he says, you know, I can't do it. I want to, you know, I'm on the side of good, not evil. And so that's when he first uses his powers. And he basically kills him from inside his head. Like he stares at him until he falls over dead from an aneurysm or something.
I wish I would have seen that. That would have been a good laugh.
Yeah. And it's really poorly done. I mean, I can see what they were trying to do with this movie. And when the reporter dies, that to me was one of the best scenes in the movie because it was just so over the top where the crows eat her eyes and she stumbles into the road. I mean, and then that terrible dummy. Oh, that was
some bad movie stuff that I did kind of like. I could see that in an episode of Riff Tracks or Mystery Science. Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Well, and the thing is like Meshach Taylor from Designing Women, he gets cut in half by an elevator cable later. Because he discovers something about Damien, and then towards the end, William Holden decides he's figured it all out. He's listened to everybody. He's watched Nicholas Pryor get crushed between two train cars. And says, okay, well, that's the last straw. He's obviously killing all these people and my son. And so let's go kill him. So he goes to the museum to get the knives that they've unearthed from the first one or the first part of this one. And Lee Grant is there who suddenly they're fighting over the knives and she's like, you sound crazy. And then she stabs him and says, I've always been with Damien. And she kills William Holden. And then Damien sets fire to the room she's in and basically kills her too. So she did this for nothing. And then he goes outside. Damien goes outside the museum as all the fire trucks and stuff are going there. And then what's his face? I think it's Robert Foxworth. He's sitting there and then it's just Damien looking at the camera. And you know, they put the Bible verse over the end shot of him. So,
I mean, the score for the original is pretty good. The score's not bad. I think people like the score of these movies.
Well, I mean, Jerry Goldsmith, it was called Ave Satani, and he won his only Oscar for it.
Yeah. See, there you go. So, maybe that's what compels people about these movies.
I mean, it's, you know, especially like religious people, they want to believe that the, you know, the fight between good and evil is, you know, being waged on their behalf every single day. And okay, sure, believe that. But I think that's what keeps them coming back to these kind of movies. You know, religious horror, what have we had in the last year? Like 5 different religious horror movies that we've watched? Because religion is scary. for a lot of different reasons to a lot of different people.
Right.
And I can't... I mean, everybody has their beliefs, and you go right ahead and believe what you want. It doesn't not matter to me, as long as you're not trying to force it on me. And if this is what scares you, I can see it. As someone who grew up Catholic and was raised in the church, I can see where all of the, you know, this stuff might be really scary.
I can't see why anything in Omen 2 is scary though. Like unwatchable. It is dull. William Holden is so just does not give a fuck mode. I don't know why him and Gregory Peck were ever anywhere near this franchise. Neither of them wants to be there. And this is just, it's a train wreck. The two is just, it's so dull. It is such a dull movie. But
Gregory Peck was 100 times better than William Holden.
That's not saying a lot. William Holden was not trying. He's still at the end of his life. I just need another paycheck to get me another bottle and then I can be out of here. He's in God's waiting room, just like, I've pickled myself, God. Let's go. Come
on. Yeah, well, and it doesn't really even make any sense because of the fact that at the end of the first one, there didn't even have to be a second one. Because Damian went with the president, which is where he wanted to be. And then now he's back in like the business world with his uncle. It's like,
no, it was really, they didn't expect to make a hit movie with the, and they did make a hit movie and they're like, oh shit, we need a fucking sequel right away. Let's go. Somebody go to the old Hollywood nursing home, see if William Holden's still alive. Let's go. terrible. Not as bad, though. Not as bad as Omen 3 with Sam Neill, which is just, I mean, one of the dumbest movies I've ever seen. This movie is so terrible. It stars Sam Neill. The lead character is the villain. Which is, it can work. It can work that way, but this is like such not a good villain. Sam Neill is Damian, grown up. He's running the Thornton Company. He's manipulating things to make him look like a benevolent, whatever. He's manipulated his way into being the ambassador to England, and he's trying to set up to battle the Nazarene. And I thought, okay, finally, a battle versus good versus evil. Okay, so we're going to have a point and a purpose in this movie. Then they introduce no heroes. They introduce not a single hero. They introduce a group of just these faceless morons who just run headlong into their own death, just headlong into their own death over and over again. Like we're watching the fucking Keystone Cops try and kill the devil. It is so stupid. I hated these characters so much. And I was kind of laughing, and I didn't make it to the end because I wanted to see if they would be dumb enough to put the devil in the room with the new baby Jesus, whatever. And then they did, and I was laughing so hard. Yeah. This is a terrible film.
So this one is like my least favorite of the original ones because it's so. I mean they. The first one had the inventive kills and, is he going to get Damian in time or not? The second one had the inventive kills and you kind of knew that Damian was going to just survive. This one, I saw part of an interview with the writer director who's like, I just thought the other ones relied too heavily on the kills and not enough on the story. And I was like, that's what made them fun.
This Fox guy does not know the movie. This is not the man to make this movie.
A very long fox hunt, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, God. What an interminable. It's so long. Oh, yeah. God. Why? Why is that in the movie?
Yeah, as I was rewatching this, I was like, okay, so the first one, I like that movie. I think it's a very well done religious horror movie from the 70s. Where could this have ended up? And this is not where I would even remotely have it end up.
Right.
In part two, Damian, yes, he can become aware of his powers and start to use them. They just need better writers and, maybe Jimmy Stewart instead of William Holden.
So glad Jimmy Stewart. Well, he was dead, right? He was gone.
No, he died in the 80s.
Oh, he did? Oh.
He could have done this.
Oh God! What a horror! That's the darkest timeline that Jimmy Stewart's career falls so far that he did as this.
But and I was like, okay, so we do that, but we have Carrie Fisher come in and punch up the dialogue and the story. What could you do with part three? Assuming you have to make part three. And
don't do whatever this is.
Yeah. I mean, if I was if we were making sequels to the remake and say they remade it again today, okay? Mm-hmm. So they remake it based off the last one, the newest one. Okay, so he's not born of a jackal, blah blah blah. He's born of this nun, and they chase her down and whatever. Part two, since she's not dead, she can come back part three, she can come back and fight Damien. You know, she's the one who survived all this and blah, blah, blah. She comes back and fights him. I don't know anything about the storyline we're given here.
Storyline about a bumbling group of fucking dumbasses who try to kill the devil and end up just getting themselves repeatedly just blasted, just killed the dumbest possible fucking ways. Then it's not intended to be funny. That's the thing. It's not supposed to be funny, but it's very funny. Just how stupid this movie is. That mm-hmm. part is funny, but it's not an enjoyable kind of bad. It's kind of just like you reflect on it and go, what the fuck was anybody thinking when they wrote this down and put this into a movie? Kind of dumb.
Aiming quality about this is the fact that they're killing all these babies.
the only part of this movie that registered with me was that there would be an asshole on TV who goes, yeah, Corey, I mean, this is perfectly normal that the mm-hmm. firstborn child, all these babies are dying. Uh-huh. Don't worry about that. That's perfectly. There'd be a guy on Fox News, you just know, who would be justifying why this is happening.
Alex Jones on Twitter. Well, you know, we're going to have to kill a few babies if we're going to, you know, if the president is going to stay the president for another term, we're going to have to kill some babies. No, not until after they're born, though. No killing them until after they're born.
Was there some kind of rule that said that everybody hired to be in this movie has to, like, not be at all interesting in case they compete with Sam Neill?
Well, even Sam Neill's not interesting in this movie. Hard. Because Sam Neill is an excellent actor.
At least he looks like an actor. He has the mannerisms of an actor. Everybody else just feels like they were pulled off the street.
Yeah, there's nobody in this, with the exception of a few character actors who we've seen in other things. It's like, it's just that everybody in it is just, he's surrounded by people who just, like, fade from memory.
Hmm. Ridiculous. And, of course, there's got to be a kid with bangs, of course, because the devil loves bangs. I don't understand it. I don't understand that. Just, we've got this aesthetic, we have to hold to it. That's just we've established the bangs thing. That's got to be there. It's in every movie now. I don't know. That's just, it makes me laugh every time I think of it, so I just keep bringing it up. I don't know if there are bangs in Omen 4, because I only made it about 15 minutes into this piece of shit. This was made in 1991 for television, because they can't get these things into theaters anymore after what they did with the third one. So they made one for TV, and I mean, like I said, I made 15 minutes in, and I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. I'm going to go fucking live my life. So have you watched this piece of shit?
I did, kind of. Like, I turned it on.
Even you can't get through this.
I turned it on. I was working on a drawing while I watched.
Mm-hmm.
I did get the major plot point of the fact that she's somehow conceived of Damien before he died, or his sperm or something.
You know, he was banging. He was yeah. Banging.
Yeah, It was like a very special episode of Desperate Housewives with the devil.
The little girl did have bangs. She did.
So
gotta keep the aesthetic. Because that haircut is the most important. It's the lasting legacy of Damien and the Omen is that haircut. Why? I don't know. It's because it's the most evil haircut.
I like Faye Grant, who played the mom. That's about the nicest thing I can say about it. It's really, yeah. So she's born
a nice lady.
She's born of Damien, right? Like
right.
She's part of his bloodline, and then she has a twin that she somehow has absorbed that she can then pass on to the mother, so that when Faye Grant or Faye. Is that her name, Faye Grant? Now that I'm
saying, I have no idea.
So she gets pregnant, and you know how, like in the first one, where he's trying to kill the baby so that he doesn't have anybody competing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is somehow she has passed on her twin to Faye Grant. Yes, Faye Grant is her name. And she gives birth to the male Antichrist again, because it has to be a male.
Okay.
And it's the what? I don't understand how they did that. I don't understand why.
The most important thing, does the twin have the haircut?
Well, the twin's a baby. The twin doesn't have any hair, so...
He will eventually. He'll get the hair. It'll come.
Yeah.
That's how this works. The devil's actually just a hairstylist. You didn't know this. I know nobody's told us this before. My new headcanon is that the devil is actually a what kind of animal was it?
A jackal.
A jackal hairdresser. The devil is a jackal hairdresser. Is that any less believable?
I mean, you're not wrong.
He's going to end the world by giving everyone bangs. And that's the Omen franchise, ladies and gentlemen. Easy ranking. I think the first Omen, the new movie, is the best one. Then I guess the original, I would say that I made it all the way through the third one, so I'll give that one third place, then two, and then four.
I'm going to go with the first one, the original Omen. Then I would, just competency alone, I would have to go with the first Omen. The original Omen, then the first Omen, then the remake. Unnecessary, but competently and well acted. Then I guess the second one, and it's a toss up between the third and the fourth one because they're just bad.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's not a good franchise, and I don't have anything against the people who made the first Omen, but we don't need any more. Nell Tagliaferri needs to go work with a good director. Not that this isn't a bad director either. This director needs to go on and do other things because they're not a bad director. But she needs to get out of this franchise and go do something else with her time. Find a Ty West and do something like that. You know, just go find a better director and do something else that isn't this franchise. Because Nell Tagliaferri doesn't need to have her talent tied down to this any longer than she already has been. They're probably going to make a sequel. I hope not, but they probably will. I don't know how successful this was. Hopefully not successful enough. we'll have to wait and see. But Jeff, I got to wrap it up, but thank you.
Thanks a lot.
We'll talk next week. Of course, we'll be talking about Civil War. We'll be talking about Spiders. Nicolas Cage's new movie, Arcadian, which is not bad.
Already watched it.
I saw it. It's not bad.
Hmm.
I'll expand on that, but I'm going to go see this movie. It's not that bad. All right, Jeff, thank you.
Thanks a lot.